Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by BlackRock Health, providing patients with world-class clinical care and comfort, enabling swifter recoveries.
But first this morning, I'm joined by one of the women President Biden name-checked as pioneering when he made his keynote address at Ulster University. Brona Hines is a founding member of the Northern Ireland Women's Coalition, which came into existence in 1996 to encourage the involvement of women in the peace process on a cross-community basis. And Brona Hines is sitting across from me now. Brona, thanks so much. You came down all the way this morning from Northern Ireland, Belfast. Thanks so much, Brona.
Good morning, Miriam. I'm delighted to be here.
Delighted for you to be here as well, Brona. And Brona, I was blessed the other day because you were with me in Belfast as President Biden made that speech at Ulster University. Now, as the dust settles on his visit, how do you feel his visit has impacted, first of all, on Northern Ireland?
I think it's landed very well. He made great efforts because behind this, everybody had been talking about his Irish background, So he made great efforts to reach out to Ulster Scots and part of his Ulster Scots background and, in a sense, English background as well as as Irish background. But also, it was very forward-looking, very future-looking. He brought economic delegates with him. He has Joe Kennedy there, who's going to be his lead here, his special envoy on the economy. And he's really looking to the future, and particularly to the future for young people, and investing in young people. So there were a number of young entrepreneurs at his speech. And I think that's all very healthy.
And it was great as well, I suppose, that it was very well received by Geoffrey Donaldson. Happy days.
Yes, happy days. Got to keep Geoffrey happy. But let's not forget that there are multiple other parties and all of the other parties are working more closely together, waiting for the time when the Democratic Unionist Party will join them.
I suppose it was important, though, as well, though, that tone that he got so right in Ulster University. It will help. People are hoping. And are you optimistic, Brona, that maybe post next month's elections, we may eventually see everything back up and running in the north?
Well, I'm sure we will see it back up and running at some time. Brexit was very toxic. It was, in fact, I've been talking to members of the DUP who said to me it was a disaster. We shouldn't have actually supported Brexit, several have said to me. And that is what has held us up. Now, we've got an agreement as good as we're going to get on that. And I think Geoffrey needs to lead over the hump and maybe show some of the courage and leadership that David Trimble had to show coming towards signing the agreement. We all need him to be there and we all need to move forward. Whether it will happen immediately after the elections, I'm not sure. We have the marching season coming up in July. I truly hope that he will step up after the elections, if not before, and before the marching season. I think that would be the courageous and leadership thing to do.
So now let's talk about you, Brona. Go right back. It was actually very moving when he mentioned the pioneering women in his speech, and that included you as part of the Women's Coalition. But go back. You're, of course, sister to that fabulous actor, Ciarán Hines. But tell me about your own upbringing in Belfast and how you got involved in politics.
Well, I have to say I had a very happy childhood and upbringing in Belfast. We lived in North Belfast. Not untouched by the conflict. In fact, North Belfast has the highest incidences of deaths and injuries in the conflict than any other area in Belfast. But we had a very happy childhood. We were happy at school. We had a fabulous time going to Irish dancing with the fabulous Patricia Mulholland. I think Ciarán and I spoke at a programme many years ago on this. And speech and drama. My father was a doctor, slightly disappointed that none of us wanted to go down the medical line. But I think we were all more taken after my mother, who was an amateur actress, a very good amateur actress, and involved in voluntary work and community work around at the time.
And there were four girls, and he was blessed, I believe, Ciarán, as the only boy.
Yeah, four girls and Ciarán. Now, we keep saying he got special treatment because my father went to a boarding school outside Dublin, And my mother expected Ciarán to be sent to the same boarding school and was very taken aback when my father said, well, why would I arrange for him to go there when there's a perfectly good school one bus ride down the road? Yet we as girls were all sent to a boarding school in Kilkeel. Mainly because my mother had been the oldest girl in a family of 14, and she had done a lot of the looking after the household and stuff. And then the priest came in one day and said to her mother, would you not give that girl a chance? And I think she got to spend her last 3 years in a boarding school and, you know, focus on her academic work and become a teacher, which, by the way, in those days you had to give up when you got married.
When you got married.
And she thought that was good for us. And I have to say, I can't complain about my time there. I think of what has happened to all the young women who has come from that school. The school, St. Louis Grammar School, and I give a shout out to Kevin Martin, the headmaster, and the teachers in that school, celebrating the 100th anniversary of St. Louis this year, set up after partition because girls used to go to Monaghan, to the Louis and Monaghan. They were a little afraid that they wouldn't be able to get over the border after partition, so they set up the school. And I took part in their first International Women's Day event, which they're going to continue, with 16 fabulous women who are doing all sorts of things, from leading and banking to engineering sports cars to to being involved with politics and building peace processes. Not just me, other young women. It's fabulous.
And then you went, I know, to Queen's. And is this correct, Brona? Were you the first female to ever become president of a students' union on this island?
Yes, I believe so. I didn't actually know I was the first president of Queen's Students' Union until somebody wrote to me from outside who had been at Queen's before and said to me, do you realise you are the first woman who've become student president, a female president of Queen's? And then I discovered when someone became president of Trinity, she said to me, actually, you were the first female president in any university on this island. So I suppose I have that to my credit.
Yeah, that's that activism, I suppose. So you had that from a young age, like getting involved in student politics, getting involved in students' union.
Yeah, I don't know what I do know what triggered me. I was always very interested in history. And as we were coming to our senior years, we got to watch television, and most people wanted to watch Top of the Pops. But myself and another young woman, Bronagh O'Hanlon, whose uncle was involved in politics, were more interested in watching the news. And at that time, there was People's Democracy. There was a lot of civil rights emerging. And so I was following that quite a lot. And I had links, having gone to the Gaeltacht in Donegal, with people who were involved in student politics in Queen's. So I was involved from the very first moment I went in. I became elected as a first year representative to the Students' Representative Council. I later became welfare officer. I was one of those who established the civil rights branch in Queen's University. We made the flag and went up to what became later Bloody Sunday. You forget all sorts of things around that. I remember a woman that I met several years later was a student with me on that bus as we went up. She said to me, do you not remember, Brona, you had this Our Civil Rights banner wrapped around your body underneath your jumper so that the soldiers, when they stopped the vans, wouldn't see it. And we had hurley sticks in the back of the vans because we were going to say we were going up to play a camogie match. Actually, it might have been regarded as offensive weapons when you think about it, you know. But you forget all of these little things. And at that time, too, we set up the Northern Ireland Women's Rights Movement, and people were saying, oh, wait, you know, civil rights was very important. I was on the Civil Rights Association executive. But setting up the women's rights movement was also equally important in terms of moving the agenda on women's rights forward.
What do you remember, since you mentioned Bloody Sunday? Do you remember much about that day? What do you remember about that day?
Well, I remember arriving as the march was going down the hill. I remember us having to catch up because there were so many stops from Belfast because they were trying to delay people getting up to Derry. And I remember coming down, and I remember a little stone throwing at the back of the march and tear gas. And the van was up near what's now Free Derry Wall. And they were calling for banners because some of the banners hadn't made it down. And as we were making it down with a banner, the shooting started, and you could actually see the shooting coming off the wall. So I remember going down and diving behind, and one of the people on the van there was Rory McShane, and saying to him, "What are we going to do?" And he's saying, "There's nothing we can do because of all the shooting that's going on." We didn't have mobile phones in those days, so I don't know how we all got together to get home. So we kind of made our way. We hung around till dark. We were hearing stories. Oh, one person's been shot, another person has been shot. But we didn't hear the whole story. And when you think about it, what I didn't know is at home, my parents knew that I was there. And they were absolutely terrified. But nobody was contacting anybody till they got home. And then, of course, after that, we had the fantastic march in Newry, where people came from all over Ireland. People from Kerry came, even Kerry and Cork, from all ends of this island came. And it was an illegal march, so it was almost constrained within the Derrybeg estate. But we marched around there to show solidarity and support. But Bloody Sunday was devastating. I spent a week to 10 days in Derry volunteering. Wonderful woman, Bridget Bond, who's recognised in the Peace Heroines exhibition that's travelling around at the moment, was a real stalwart, and she was managing from her kitchen table the Civil Rights Association and the gathering of evidence. And I was just a young student then. And I remember going up with another young woman and staying up there, being billeted in somebody's house for a week to 10 days and going door to door to gather eyewitness accounts. And one of the things that fell into our lap then was a guy said to us, he said, "I've got all these photographs." And we said, "You've got photographs?" He said, "Yeah, I don't know why I did it," I said, "because all all the shooting around. But I thought, I'm here with the camera, I'll take photographs." But he didn't know what to do with them. So we said, "Well, we'll take them up to the Civil Rights Association office." So that was, and that was one of the first times that I actually then spoke, because there was a big student meeting in the Whitlow Hotel, in the Whitlow Hall in Queens. And people were looking for people who had been eyewitnesses there. So I found myself speaking at that meeting, for example, in a packed Whitlow Hall that takes thousands, you know.
So do you think that politicised you more and may, in a sense, have led you getting involved in the Women's Coalition?
I think so. I think, well, I had a route through the voluntary sector mainly. I worked for a while in Dublin in combat poverty. I then went back up to Belfast, and I was director of Gingerbread, which is the One Parent Family organisation, for 10 years. Fabulous organisation, and I loved doing the group work myself. 26 groups all over Northern Ireland, and they were fantastic. We did a lot of campaigning there. Like, the benefits were so low and the increases were so low. I remember when Maggie Thatcher were there, we sent her 26 toilet rolls to represent the amount of benefits that was being given to people. A toilet roll for every group in Northern Ireland, simply to make an impact. So we were always campaigning. I was chair of the Northern Ireland Council for Voluntary Action, which is the body, the umbrella body of all the voluntary sector. So we were engaged there in advocating on voluntary sector's behalf, negotiating with government.
Cross-community or not? Cross-community, Protestant and Catholic.
Absolutely cross-community. And one of the things that I raised also within NICFA, though, was the whole issue of the HERD principles, which were withdrawing money from groups in West Belfast simply because they were working in West Belfast. For example, out of Conway Mill, a great organisation like the Workers' Educational Association that was doing, came out of the labour movement, that was doing grassroots education in West Belfast, you know, had its money cut because the British government assumed that Sinn Féin was running everything in West Belfast. But this wasn't true, you know, and really community organisations needed to be trusted and invested in. I was also at that time, and I'm very privileged, I went from Gingerbread to being regional director of Oxfam in Northern Ireland, when Oxfam used to be the when Oxfam and Northern Ireland used to be bigger than Oxfam and the South, you know, the South was kind of a spun off from the North, and now, and both were part of the UK operation at that time. But after that, I went to be director of the Ulster People's College, which was set up to actually try to build relationships across the community. So we were working in building community leadership, community development, community relations right across the community in grassroots communities, disadvantaged communities, which were most effective across Northern Ireland, and working behind the scenes on the political issues and working with former prisoners and paramilitaries behind the scenes and having discussions to try and move people on. Like, we were running programmes in the Ulster People's College where people got into the room from either side of the conflict who may have been former paramilitaries, who saw their enemy in the room and wanted to leave. And by the end of the time, they were actually working together. Because one of the things that we were trying to do was yes, build common ground, but something that we need to do in dealing with a legacy moving forward, but we were doing then, was actually talking about culture, identity, history, because we have to have those hard conversations.
And in a sense, that's what, you know, President Biden, he spoke about in his speech and he name-checked, obviously, Pioneering Women, the Women's Coalition, which was a very important part of the Good Friday Agreement 25 years on. How did the Women's Coalition come about? Remind me.
Well, let me just go back a bit to the mid 80s and 90s. We set up, after the Northern Ireland Women's Rights Movement, we set up in the Northern Ireland Women's European Platform, now called the Women's Platform. And we set that up because we wanted to link in to the European Women's Lobby. I had been asked to be part of the lobbying group, lobbying for the European Women's Lobby. We'd set up an initial small group called the European Network of Women, which we all found our own way to work on because it wasn't really funded then. And we were lobbying for the establishment of the European Women's Lobby. So I was involved in helping to establish the European Women's Lobby. But I was chair of NICFA, Northern Ireland Council for Voluntary Action at the time, and on a commissioner on the Equal Opportunities Commission, which was the Gender Commission at the time. And we realised that in England, the National Council of Voluntary Organisations Women's Committee thought that it was going to be the sole representative to the European Women's Lobby because there had to be a representative in each member state. And we said, no, 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 no. And I went to meetings and discovered a woman from Scotland going to the same meetings as we thrashed that out in England to make sure that there was a four nations approach to it. And on the basis of that, we were able to work very closely with our sisters in Scotland and Wales and England, and very closely with the National Women's Council of Ireland, our sister organisation. We ran the first All-Ireland Women's Conference, 50 women from the North and 50 women from the South. We had meetings looking at the OPSAL commissions, which had done this big consultation across Ireland on the conflict and women's contribution to the OPSAL commission. We held that in the Department of Foreign Affairs. We held a big debate up in Stormont Parliament buildings when it was closed. It was open for us especially to do a women's North-South assembly type debate on the issues, and we worked with civil servants and we issued press statements on the peace process. So the Women's Platform started agitating for women to be in the negotiations,
which ultimately led to the Women's Coalition being involved. Interestingly, I interviewed Hillary Clinton about a week ago for Primetime, and she was saying that she remembers Monica McWilliams and Pearl Sagar coming to the White House, but that they said to her initially it was difficult to be involved. It was male dominated, I suppose, the peace talks, not to take away from what was achieved, but that she helped give confidence to Monica and Pearl and women like you, Brona, to go back and play a big role in the talks.
Yeah, I think she did, because on that trip out to the United States, they had forgotten to include the Women's Coalition in the visits, meetings with the president, and therefore Hillary met with them. And actually that turned out to be even better, because she put a big bit about it in her speech on the St. Patrick's Day that year in the White House, which was fantastic. But that kind of toxic language was very difficult. We got a lot of stick from the media and from other parties for bothering to focus any attention on it. But what we were trying to do was not just address the language was just misogynistic and sexist, but was hatred, demonising and intended to interrupt the flow of the negotiations and undermine the negotiations and make it try to make it impossible for people to support the outcome because various parties to it had been demonised. So for us, it was a very important part of our strategy that we addressed that.
But interestingly as well, Brone, I mean, you mentioned earlier you went to that great school, St. Louis, but I was up again for primetime last week and we went to the Peace Walls, which still exist, yes, as we know. But there were women from both communities, from both sides of the walls, great women like you doing their best. But they all felt if it continues to have segregated education, where by and large, Catholic children go to Catholic schools, Protestant children go to Protestant schools, this problem may continue for generations. Do you agree with that, that education, in a sense, needs to change a little bit?
Well, I agree with that and more. It isn't surprising to me that the politicians focused on the power structures that are in the agreement. It isn't surprising that we had to focus on the stuff with the guns and the security. But it's interesting that the stuff that the Women's Coalition put into the agreement, which was about the people, is the third element to be done. Not just the advancement of women in public and political life, but social cohesion, community development, integrated education, mixing our communities, mixed housing, equality and human rights. We're still waiting for our Single Equality Act and the Bill of Rights. All of those issues, I think, speak more to the everyday lives of people.
And interesting, you were saying to me the other day, like, you believe most people in the North want to get on together. Like, you work so now cross-community, women from all sides primarily. And you were saying it's only a small, small group that don't want this to work. Everyone wants it to work.
Yeah, the vast majority of people want it to work. You know, two things moving forward. We missed the opportunity of the economic bounce after the agreement because the Assembly was up and down and up and down. We cannot miss the opportunity of the economic bounce and the goodwill that is here on the 25th anniversary. And secondly, we need to move forward in terms of our future and our young people. So everybody does want to move forward. The critical thing is that we need government back in Northern Ireland, but we need government which is less tribal. Doing this for my side and I'll do this for your side. We need government that is really leading a process of reconciliation, that is demonstrating by its behaviour that is leading and leadership for a united community. That's one of the challenges ahead.
And actually, to be fair, I suppose, to President Biden, bringing Joe Kennedy, they're all about trying to put some kind of economic dividend. If the Assembly's back up and running, they'll pour money into the North.
No, absolutely. And we would be mad to miss that point. The other thing is that we do have to deal with the legacy of the past. And we need to give more attention to victims and survivors of conflict. Every single day of the year marks the anniversary of someone's death as a result of the conflict. Nearly 4,000 deaths, nearly 50,000 people injured. One in five people are touched by this. But President Biden put those in US figures. He talked about 600,000, over 600,000 deaths. 7.7, I translated that into injuries. That would be 7.7 million in the United States. In the UK, nearly 130,000 deaths it would have been, and 1.6 million injuries. And if we're talking about it in the South, over 8,000 deaths and 103,000 injuries. You know, it's about time that we give those people their place in Northern Ireland.
Well, Brona Hines, you have worked hard for decades doing that. And thank you so much for travelling down from the North today. I think you're going to go and have a fry in the canteen here.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, enjoy it. Brona Hines, thanks so much for joining us. We'll take a break.